Yes, it's go time for the guru, and he joins us here on this Monday morning. Lenny Lawson, good morning to you, car guru Lenny Lawson.
I'm here with you with all kinds of information that very few people really need.
But a lot of information that several people find useful.
There you go.
Yeah.
As long as somebody does, then I'm serving a purpose.
Indeed.
Right?
Yes.
We all want to serve a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
We want to matter. I had a sales meeting a little while ago, and we always do a rundown of our sales team and talk about, you know, the personalities and success or lack thereof of certain individual salespeople. And, you know, it's funny how it's just so cyclical. I don't know if that's the right word. A lot of up and down performance, lack of consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And usually it's a self-inflicted wound by most people, especially when you're in sales. You know, they stop doing the things that made them successful before. And we had a really good month last month. A month before that was phenomenal with our official grand opening month. We've had a kind of a 90-day rollout of our new Nissan store, and we've done it with 9 salespeople. And, you know, 10 years ago, I would think it would be impossible for us to sell as many cars as we've been selling with 9 salespeople. But one of the things that makes that possible, Tim, is that I've got really good managers, and they are very much involved, you know, in the selling process with the sales team, you know, interacting with customers and taking salespeople that are pretty inexperienced in some cases and still making them successful. You know, one of the first things we always try to do is to make sure that the salesperson's product knowledge is good. So if a customer has questions about, you know, what's available on a particular vehicle or what, you know, what they can get, and to describe some of the features and benefits, we try to make sure that they have that down pat first. And then, you know, from actual negotiation or whatever you want to call it, the pricing part, we've really tried to simplify that with discounted online pricing and try to get away from all that back and forth stuff. I just don't think people like that anymore. Do you, Tim?
No, not anymore, it seems like.
I don't think they ever liked it. I mean, most people realize that, you know, that buying a car is a negotiation to some degree. You know, you'll have some customers that will, you know, just they come in, they've got their price, and they just want to do their paperwork. And you've got others that come in and they want to negotiate more. You know, they want to see if they can get a little bit more for their car, pay a little bit less for your car. And I think that's fine. I mean, I'm never offended by that.
Mm-hmm.
My wife hates to go shopping with me when we go to like certain places because she knows that I'm going to try and negotiate a little bit. And it's just uncomfortable for her. And and I get it. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
People are different. Right, Tim?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I was disappointed to see that GM is investing $1 billion to make their new electric vehicles. It's not because I was disappointed in that. I was disappointed where they decided to do it, Mexico. That's not good for this country, I wouldn't think. Honda is got a new all-new Civic that looks really good. I've always respected Honda. Not been a big fan of some of their cars, but They have been an innovator, and a lot of people think that Honda is the only brand, but the new Civic looks really good. Some of the other news, Tesla is getting blasted right now for their autopilot not functioning properly and leading to some accidents. So Elon Musk is blasting the critics, saying that, you know, this system, this auto self-driving system is going to be good and safe, and I'm just not feeling it, Tim. You know, when our Nissans and some of our Fords have technology that allows you to, you got to leave your hands on the steering wheel, but the car will steer itself. But when I'm in three lanes of traffic, you know, and I'm in the middle lane and I've got cars on either side of me, I don't want a computer making the decisions. You know, think about all the little reactions that my hands, you know, through my eyes, my brain, to my hands that I see and do. You know, somebody starts to come over a little bit. You know, you decide to hit the brake, maybe to let them go on up, and or you know, somebody starts to turn over on you. You know, the system will not blast the horn at them. You know, you just there's so many millions and billions of different circumstances that can happen that I just don't think there's ever going to be a computer program that's going to be in a group of cameras and sensors that are going to be able to make all those decisions. The human brain is too superior, you know, at that, as long as they're not on their cell phone or distracted by something else. But anyway, Tesla has been an innovator as far as that is concerned, so we shall see what happens there. But the biggest news is still the chip shortage, and we talked about it in our sales meeting today. Ford has pretty much canceled most production in July, and there's no allocations at all for inventory in July. We're blessed with more F-150 inventory than a lot of dealers have. We were successful in going out and buying some additional inventory before all this happened. So we've got a pretty good selection of F-150s and got a couple F-250s and 350s coming in. It's what everybody wants in terms of product, but it's just hard to find. I was talking to a vehicle locator company the other day. They said that dealers, Tim, are paying anywhere from $2,500 to $5,000 over window sticker for inventory right now. And so if they're doing that, imagine what the customers are having to pay, you know, to get the car once the dealer has it in stock. But that's how crippling that is. Now, Nissan, it's interesting. I mean, we can still get inventory. The grand opening that we had, we were able to get a pretty big shot of inventory. So we're, you know, in the low 100s right now on inventory, which is adequate, you know, for us. And so hopefully that will sustain us for a while. Nissan has not been as dramatically affected. But there aren't as many Nissan dealers. I mean, there's 4,300 Ford dealers and probably 1,500 Nissan dealers. And, you know, there's just a lot more Ford dealers that are competing for lesser and lesser inventory. We've got seven trucks, Tim, in the Dearborn. One of the big F-150 plants is in Dearborn, Michigan. And we got seven trucks that have been moved over to a storage facility, and they're just sitting there waiting on chips to come. Mm-hmm. And we ain't talking potato chips. Mm-hmm. And this chip shortage, everybody says, well, is it the pandemic? Well, yeah, it is. But also companies like Sony and Microsoft, they were preparing to release some video game consoles for, you know, really at big updates that require a lot more chips for the PlayStation and Xbox. And then all this big push, you know, all you've heard on television as far as Verizon and everything is this big switch to 5G. Well, that's soaking up a lot of chips. And back at in the middle of the pandemic, Ford, I know, that's the only thing I'm directly aware of, canceled a lot of orders and actually shipped back a bunch of computer chips to the factories in Taiwan because they said, we can't build the vehicles and we don't need them. And now they're screaming for them to send them back. So there might be a little retribution going on there. I have no idea. But that's bigger than me. All I know is we've got a lot. We've got customers that want to buy cars, and we're going to do everything we can to find them for them. So. Mm-hmm. We shall see. I was driving the 280Z that I bought from one of my listeners. Love that car. Mm-hmm. Very grateful for the opportunity to buy it. It's a 1978 280Z. And when you're driving an old car like that, it's inevitable. You know, something's going to happen. So I was looking at the tailpipe, and there's smoke coming out of the tailpipe. And I said, uh-oh, what's that? Well, we're going to talk about, right after the break, we're going to talk about what does that smoke mean? What is that that's coming out of your tailpipe, and why? And we'll be back here in just a minute.
And we're back here on My Car Guru for this Monday morning, and we're talking smoke and smoke coming out of the tailpipe. And, you know, a lot of times it depends on the color of that smoke, doesn't it, Lenny?
It really does. And, you know, the smoke that was coming out of the tailpipe on this 280Z was black. And, you know, that could mean a number of different things. You know, anytime you talk about old cars, like I say, you're going to have issues. Even though, you know, it could be a low mileage car, it just hasn't been driven a long time. And there's so many different things that can cause this smoke to come out. You know, you'll have a well-working, well-functioning car. Typically, the exhaust is barely visible. You might see some steam exhaust in the morning, you know, on a cold morning. But it is a definite visual sign that there's something going on. You know, back in the old days, we didn't have check engine lights. Mm-hmm. You know, today, if you have a situation where an engine is running rich, which doesn't happen much anymore because of fuel injection, but if you have one of the sensors going bad, a little light's going to show up on your dash. But back in the old days, they had to pretty much rely on sight, smell, touch, black exhaust smoke, for example. This is what was coming out of the tailpipe of this car. It's not good for you. You know, you're not supposed to smell it, and Tara and I definitely, we could both smell it. Mm-hmm. But it could mean something like a clogged fuel line, return line, I mean, a leaking fuel injector, which this particular car does have fuel injection. So it could be putting extra fuel into the engine, more so than the engine needs, and also at the wrong time in the combustion process. Could be a stuck fuel pressure regulator. The risk is that you could damage the lower end of the engine and also the exhaust emission components, and it can end up getting expensive. So black exhaust smoke is a problem typically related to fuel. White exhaust smoke, this is, like I say, in the winter, it's just because probably low temperatures and it's normal. If the outside temperatures are warm and your exhaust smoke is still white, then you've got a problem. This means that coolant has somehow leaked into the combustion chamber. This could be caused by several different things. The most minor but still expensive is a blown head gasket. That's the gasket that goes between the engine block where the cylinders reside and the pistons and the head where the valves and the valve train is. So there's a gasket between there. And sometimes that gasket will blow outside and sometimes it will blow inside. If it blows inside, it allows coolant to get to the combustion chamber and that gasket has to be replaced. A more serious problem would be a cracked engine block. Mm-hmm. Then you're talking about an engine replacement. Could be a cracked cylinder head, which would be a head replacement. But any of these are pretty major repairs. If you see white smoke coming in out of your car and it's in warm temperatures, pull over and don't drive the car. Get it towed in, because the more you drive it, the more you're going to exacerbate the problem.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, Tim, have you ever seen any of those two coming out of the tailpipe of your vehicles?
Yeah, on my Plymouth Horizon TC3 one time, I blew a head and... in fact, that was the death knell for the car, pretty much. White smoke was coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's another color smoke that is of concern, and that's a bluish-gray exhaust smoke. These are pretty much the only three that you're going to see, and this indicates that something's leaked into the combustion chamber. But in this case, it's not coolant, and it's not extra fuel. It's oil. The time and the cost of repairing this could go either way. On one hand, it could be a leaking valve seal or a stuck PCV valve, which is part of the positive crankcase ventilation. It's designed to help reburn gas and unburned fuel and was a part of the big emission control push back in the 70s. It could also be a worn piston ring or a worn cylinder wall. It's usually the sign of, you know, early engine failure, and it's not easily repaired. It's about time to rebuild the engine if you see this, especially if the cylinder walls have been damaged by and worn over time. But, you know, routine oil changes, engine oil flushes every 30,000 miles or so, you know, could help prevent this from happening. So much of this is driven by maintenance. Another thing that drives it, though, is just the car sitting, you know, just like this 280Z that I bought. It was it just sat for a long time. It had a lot of engine work done to it before I got it, but I think even after that it sat for extended periods of time. And, you know, these components, little gaskets and little seals and things like that, they go bad, and there's so many of them. You know, it's not like you can just pinpoint one, like, for example, fuel injectors. This car it's an inline six-cylinder, so it has six fuel injectors, and, you know, it could be any one of them. There are ways of testing the fuel line pressure, and also there are tests that you can do to injectors themselves. But typically what you do is just go and replace them all. And so, you know, that's something that you would do on an older car, but a lot of older cars don't have fuel injection. It's weird. I'm talking about an antique car that has fuel injection. You know, fuel injection that kind of came around first in the 50s, but it really wasn't that much used or perfected, except by the Germans in the 70s and 80s. And in the early 80s, they came out with something called throttle body injection, which is still sitting on top of the engine and the gas going through an intake. But the fuel injection is on everything now. So it doesn't matter what you're buying, it's going to have fuel injection. Very reliable. That's why you don't have to push the gas pedal down to start the car anymore. Mm-hmm. The computer does that for you. So in some cases, computers have really made our lives a whole lot easier. And when it comes to cars, they make our cars run better. But, again, they're expensive to repair, and sometimes you will see something nasty coming out of the tailpipe. And Tim, I just wanted you to – wanted to pass that on to folks so they know what they're looking for, just in case. But we'll take our last break and be back here in just a minute.
And we're back here on a Monday with the final few minutes of My Car Guru with Lenny Lawson.
You know, back in the early 70s, my dad became the Chevy dealer in Greenville, 1971. And I remember just how excited my brother and I both were. That dad no longer worked in an office building in downtown Charleston, West Virginia. He actually had a business, you know, that he was running, and it had a bunch of cars on it, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was just for a 14-year-old and a 16-year-old just got his driver's license. You know, that was a pretty exciting thing. One of the early cars that we had was General Motors' attempt at building a small car that could be competitive with some of the other offerings out there, like in the early 70s, Toyota was starting to come on, Datsun was starting to come on, and so GM decided to come out with the Vega. And some of you may have never heard of that car, but if you're my age or maybe a slightly younger, you'll remember the Chevy Vega. And this was an effort that was pushed too quickly. Just another example of the bean counters taking control over and above good engineering advice. They were desperate to get this small car introduced in a very short period of time. From the time they first conceived the Vega until it hit, it was about 2.5 years. And they can pull that off today with today's technology, but back then it was tough. Vega is best remembered for its infamous melting engine. Now, did you ever own a Vega, Tim, or are you too young? You're too young for that.
No, I remember Vegas. We didn't own one, but I had a girlfriend that had one. And it was that color, it was that butterscotch yellowish color. Remember that?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, a typical 70s color.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if they had just made the engine out of cast iron, we might still be selling, or, well, Chevy dealers might still be selling Vegas. But they decided to make the engine out of aluminum. And they developed this special alloy. And actually, the cylinder walls were aluminum that were treated instead of having cast iron cylinder sleeves. And so that was a problem. The cylinders, if the engine actually got too hot, the cylinders would distort, and it would wear the coating that GM thought was adequate on the walls, and it would force coolant past the head gaskets. What color smoke does that lead to, Tim?
Coolant?
You remember? Yeah, coolant. What color smoke is that coming out of the tailpipe?
That was bluish gray, wasn't it?
No, that's oil.
Oh,
coolant
that's...
is white.
White, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right.
White smoke.
Okay, gotcha.
So there were a lot of people driving around with white smoke coming out their tailpipe of their relatively new Chevy Vegas. Yeah. So if the Vega owner didn't really pay attention to their coolant, keep it topped off, the Vega could and often would destroy its own engine. Chevrolet extended the warranty and retrofitted an overflow bottle and a low coolant light and came out with an all-new design that had steel cylinder sleeves, and they fixed the car. But it was too little too late. It was the same thing that happened with the Corvair. You know, the Corvair had obvious steering problems or handling problems. They weren't fatal if you kept the tire pressures right, but they could be very disconcerting if you didn't know how to drive the car and had the pressures wrong. They fixed all of that in 65, but it was too late. You know, the Mustang had come out and pretty much dominated the market. GM held on with the Corvair until 69. They held on with the Vega until 1977, and had to kill two perfectly good cars just simply because of bad execution. So just a little bit of story about to back up what I'm saying about the exhaust smoke. Watch out for that, because it is something that can really shorten the life of your vehicle if you're not careful. So that's it, Tim.
Yeah, black, white, and bluish gray, so be on the lookout for that. Yeah, I remember when Vegas were on the showroom floor at Bunton Chevrolet in Elizabeth, and, you know, we used to go down there in September for the new car reveals. And
yep.
I remember Vegas sitting on the showroom floor at my cousin's dealership there, Lionel Bunton at Bunton Chevrolet.
Yeah, the base price was $19.95.
Yep. Good memories. Well, that'll do it for My Car Guru on this Monday morning, and we will talk to you tomorrow, Lenny.